Why did Quibi fail? We dissect the demise of yet another mobile video service. With this one, the seeds of failure were sown at the very start. Listen on to find out why.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon joins me. And Colin, we've both been following the news about Quibi. It's been everywhere, right?
Oh, haven't we ever, Will? What a tale of woe that is. And that is, in fact, what we're going to jump in and talk about today. As our listeners know, I think we've done a couple of sessions that have included, one was dedicated, I think, to talking about Quibi, and then it's come up a couple of times over the past few months and year or so since the service was first announced. And, well, it's an X service, right, Will?
Yeah, I was looking back. We did our first podcast on Quibi back in June of 2019. So it's been about 16 months since we first talked about Quibi. And I think one thing that we can say is that we have both been resolutely skeptical since day one.
I think that is absolutely true. Skeptical is the right word. So we're going to dissect that a little bit, try and figure out what went wrong.
Yeah.
But give us the top line, Will.
Yeah, what went wrong and what they might have done differently to increase their odds of success. So,
yep.
You know, when you raise almost $2 billion, which Quibi did, you're certainly starting off with a pretty nice wind at your back. And you'd like to believe that with $2 billion, it's hard to fail. But Quibi shows that it is possible to do that. And I was looking back over a post that I did when Quibi announced some more of its details back at CES earlier this year, pre-COVID. This was January of 2020. And I thought then, and I still think, that there were really three major problems with Quibi. And fixing any one of them, I think would have enhanced their competitiveness. Fixing all three, who knows? They may have been able to make a go of it. But the first barrier was the paid-only model. So they made this decision not to have a freemium approach and just to have the paid tiers, $5 with advertising, $8 without advertising. And Jeffrey Katzenberg specifically said that he recognized that they were competing against free alternatives. So if he recognized that they were competing against free, to not have a free alternative, a free tier alternative as an on-ramp for users to experience Quibi was just going to limit their appeal from day one. Anytime, we talked about this, I think, on the podcast in various contexts, but anytime you're asking users to take out a credit card before they've really gotten used to the service and understand what the value is really putting up a barrier. So the paid only model was a barrier. Second is, I think they were targeting too old an age group. So Meg Whitman, CEO, had said in a previous interview that the audience was 18 to 34 year olds. And I think that was too old. I think their core audience was probably 13 to 20 year olds, maybe even 10 to 20 year olds. And that's because this is the group that really is mobile first. And they're the ones that are consuming all the content on TikTok and Snap and other mobile apps that specialize in video and social media. And I think Quibi was giving too much credit to an older audience that they would be attracted to a mobile only product, especially one that did not even have a connected TV app until relatively recently. And then I think last but not least is that the content approach was not well aligned to the audience that they should have been targeting. And it was also just way too expensive. So Katzenberg and Whitman loved using the word premium every time they talked about Quibi's content model, it was very much a Hollywood approach to content creation. And I think what they fundamentally missed in that approach is that when you look at Snap, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, et cetera, a lot of the content there is actually user generated. And that's, I think, part of the appeal for the user bases of those services is that the content is very unpolished, it's raw, it's very authentic. And that's what teenagers really gravitate to. And if that's what they're watching on their mobile phones, then spending upward of $7.5 or $8 million per episode, which is what Quibi was doing, is just a very expensive road to nowhere, because there's no way that you're ever gonna succeed spending that kind of money and competing basically against free UGC content. So I think that those were the three fundamental issues with Quibi. And I think, you know, pricing, audience, content strategy, if they had changed any of those, they would have enhanced their likelihood of success. If they changed all three, then who knows, we could be having a completely different conversation right now. But I think you have other takes on what
I do
on what doomed Quibi.
I do. But you know, before we get to those, you know, I actually don't fault them for going after the 18 to 34s, Will. And the reason is, okay, so you've made the decision that you're going to go premium. We both think that was a mistake. But once you decide you're going to go premium and you want people to pay, you really need people with disposable income. They do, you know, kids, younger kids in their teens typically don't have a lot of that, and they're not able to sign up. So, you know, going for the 18 to 34 years old on that basis is not bad. And look, they are watching a lot of video. I checked Nielsen numbers for Q1 2020, which is, of course, when they launched. Actually, they just launched January, February, March. They just launched in Q2, not Q1. But anyway,
yeah.
18 to 34s watching on average about 32 minutes a day on their smartphone. That's a good whack, right? 32 minutes a day. 82% penetration in that age group, and actually slightly older, so the 35 to 40 is pretty good too. 82% penetration at about 24 minutes a day. So there's the proof. Yes, that age group are watching video on their phone. No question about it. It's very popular. My problem is that the whole objective of filling in those odd minutes was faulty from the very beginning. Those odd minutes were already full. That's what that 32 minutes a day is that the 18 to 34 year olds are spending, right? They're already watching videos on YouTube, on Facebook, on TikTok. So
for free.
For free. And how do you compete with free? And if you look at the content, pretty much a lot of the content types that were available on Quibi, I'm particularly thinking of the news and the general entertainment gossip stuff, right?
Yeah.
That type of material is cheap. It's available online. It's available on YouTube and Facebook and everywhere, ad supported. And there's pretty good quality stuff being produced by, you know, major broadcasters in the US that people can watch if that's what they want to do. So, you know, so this whole idea that they were going after these odd moments as though these odd moments were unoccupied was just completely faulty from the very beginning. So, you know, the content, yes, premium, there should be a market for premium somewhere in the mobile space. And they did bring some good content. Not some breakout content that people absolutely had to see, but you know, I watched Dangerous Game with Liam Hemsworth and Chris Waltz. It was pretty good. I enjoyed it. I think I would have preferred it as a movie, but I liked it. Free Rayshon was really good. I thought really important. Said some really important things about race in America. Lawrence Fishburne was great in that show. He was really good. There were some big misses for me. I watched Dummy with Anna Kendrick, and oh man, it was just too gross for me. I mean, some people, I guess, find that funny, but it was just too gross. I'm not the demographic they're going after. They're going after millennials. And so I do think that there was content there, particularly the entertainment content, that was differentiated, and that you probably would struggle to find something of the quality of Dangerous Game or Free Ray Sham for free somewhere on the web, on a mobile platform. So there was quality there, but you're competing with free, and if you don't have enough of that stuff, which they didn't have, and they didn't have the breakout hit, this is what happens. You know, people don't come. And what happened to them was, yeah, we can argue about how many people signed up when it was free, but what nobody was arguing with, including Jeffrey Katzenberg and Meg Whitman, was that when that paywall came down, when that free trial ended, it's like everybody bailed. I think I was probably one of a handful of people, well, not a handful, but I did pay for a few months because I felt sort of obligated, as I'm in the business and I wanted to see what happened. But everybody bailed. And they blamed that on COVID-19. Here's what Jeffrey Katzenberg, he was interviewed, and he said, "I attribute everything that has gone wrong to coronavirus, everything, but we own it." I mean, look, I don't agree with him.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't agree with him. I mean, you talked about, what was the social site you talked about in your piece?
Well, Snap, I think, is just one of many, whether it's Snap, TikTok, Instagram, you know, YouTube, the list goes on of short form mobile video sites or apps that offer short form free video.
Right. And when I looked at the numbers, it looked to me like platforms like TikTok actually did pretty darn well during lockdown. People were were continuing, you know, if you look at, I looked at Conviva data showed 60% in mobile phone usage between Q1 2019 and Q1 2020. There was plenty of evidence that people were still using their mobile phone in their home. There was still, even Meg Whitman admitted that there were still plenty of, quote, odd moments, you know, between Zoom calls, between homeschooling sessions, when you're in the bathroom. There's plenty of those opportunities for that video to still be watched. And, you know, when you think about it, we're locked in. We were all desperate for new content, and Quibi was free for a good proportion of that period, for at least 3 months of that period when people were locked down. It's kind of unforgivable that they didn't feel compelled to come and give Quibi a try. So I don't accept that COVID is responsible for one iota of the collapse of Quibi at all. Yeah. I think actually, in my mind, this was a great opportunity. This was an opportunity for them to actually go out and capture more audience. But, you know, I mentioned TikTok, and I mentioned TikTok very specifically because I went back and checked, and TikTok did seem to do pretty well at the beginning of the pandemic. And he was asked specifically about TikTok. And here's what he said. He said, "To tell me about a company that has a billion users and is doing great in the past 6 weeks, I'm happy for them. But what the hell does it have to do with me?" And it's that last bit, "what the hell does it have to do with me," says it all, Will. Because he never accepted that he was competing with social media. And that's exactly who he was competing with.
Yeah, and I think, you know, at the risk of defending him, I think, you know, there's that old expression, I think it goes something like, "where you stand depends on where you sit." And if you've had a long career in Hollywood and your whole frame of mind is formed by, you know, spending lots of money, A-level talent, high production values, et cetera, it's very difficult, I think, for you to accept that people might actually choose to watch some, you know, complete low-grade UGC video, as an alternative. It's just, that's a mind bender, I think. It just doesn't make sense. And this is where I think a lot of Hollywood people have gotten, you know, sort of tripped up over the years. I mean, it wasn't that long ago when you had CEOs like the former CEO of Time Warner, Jeff Bukas, comparing, you know, Netflix's content to, what was it, the Albanian army? You
know, I remember that quote.
He was mocking them because they had mostly, you know, reruns on Netflix, even though some of the reruns were well-loved and great comfort food. It's just a different frame of mind. And I think that as much as, you know, on the one hand, they were saying that they were competing against free, I just don't think it's in their DNA to fully accept it, as you said, to accept that a 15-year-old kid would not prefer to watch some A-list talent over another 15-year-old girl doing an endless dance on TikTok. It's just outside their frame of reference. And once you go down that road, you know, the problem is once you go down that expensive Hollywood content road, then you have to raise lots and lots of money. And you have to use a business model that's going to create barriers for users. And certainly in Quibi's case, you know, talking about a subscription service that includes ads, I mean, that flies in the face of Netflix, Disney Plus, others that are pure subscription. And I think for a lot of people, you know, once you're pulling out your wallet, that means you've basically bought the privilege of not having to sit through ads. Conversely, if it's going to be a free service, then the way you pay for it is with your time and attention. But to try to have both right out of the gate, like Quibi did, and again, I think driven by that high-cost content model, that Hollywood approach to content, you're really painting yourself into a corner. And I think that's exactly what happened to Quibi.
Yeah, they did make a couple of course corrections. I mean, we both agreed that when they originally launched, it was blocked from being on connected TVs, and they did fix that. And I can tell you, I tried it, and I watched several episodes of Dangerous Game and Free Ray-Shan on a connected TV by casting. And let me tell you, they deserve to be on that television. Those shows were gorgeously shot, really professionally shot and delivered, and were great to look at, and they sounded great too. So, you know, that was a good thing for them to do. But I think there are some other things apart from, you know, the most basic thing was, look, for goodness sake, give us a free tier, free ad supported tier. Apart from that, you know, there were a couple of other things that I would have done in their position. First of all, I would have broken out of the 7-minute constraint. And there is plenty of evidence, actually, that people will watch longer stuff. Like, if you look at live viewing, there's plenty of live viewing going on smartphones. And if that content is good, look, people are smart enough that they can pause it when they run out of time. They don't need somebody telling them, okay, your 5 minutes are up. Here's your next episode if you're ready. So I would have dropped that constraint. I think I probably would have dropped portrait mode as well. I know it was a cute trick, and switching the views depending on which mode you were in was fun for a while. I had a lot of people complaining. I kind of agree with it, that they felt like they were missing something. If they switched to vertical mode, they felt like they were missing stuff on the side. So I can, you know, I would have maybe dropped portrait mode. And the one thing, of course, was they really did need better content. And I think the daily essentials, this was a real problem, right? Because there was, as I said, there was no differentiation between what they were really doing with the news and the daily essentials than you would find on Snap or YouTube or other platforms. And so that was just a huge problem. That was the stuff that was supposed to keep people coming in, day out. And even Katzenberg, he made the comment, the daily essentials are not that essential. And so, you know, again, this is like fatal, oops, right? This is fatal, because that's what would get people in and using that service on a daily basis. So, you know, I guess we ended up where we were probably always going to end up. Just that, you know, those investors, they must be pretty unhappy at losing. Well, I guess they didn't lose all $1.75 billion, right?
Yeah, I mean, I read that they actually still had $350 million cash on hand and they decided to pull the plug. So I give them credit for that. Of course, who knows who was making that decision, whether it was Katzenberg or the board that made that decision. But, you know, they clearly realized that they did not have a viable approach and they decided to pull the plug. And, you know, we only have a couple minutes left, but it begs the question once again, mobile video startups, is it just a complete graveyard? Can you succeed? We've had Go90, yeah. Vessel, Quibi. There is nobody who has succeeded with a pure mobile-only video startup. It's just that I'm aware of anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that says something very clear, and that is that people, when they want to be entertained, they want to pick the screen. Don't tell me what screen.
Yeah.
Let me pick it. We're smart enough to pause the stuff when we're out of time. You don't need to worry about that. We'll figure it out. So make the content the length it needs to be and give it to us on all of the screens that we will potentially watch and we'll figure it out. And, you know, so doing a mobile only service, I think, is almost destined to be unsuccessful. You know, it's I suppose it's a nice little extra to offer people for the wireless carriers. I note that AT&T just launched a new wireless TV service. I don't know how it's doing, but I think it's basically mostly being given away with top tier subscribers, the unlimited subscribers. That sort of stuff is a nice bonus, but I doubt they're getting much use out of it. I mean, still, it's people want to watch. If it's really good, people want to watch on connected TV. So I know Jeffrey Katzenberg was shopping the service around and shopping the content around and haven't found any buyers. That content's not going to vanish. Who do you think is going to end up picking it up?
No idea. There's certainly no shortage of content out there. So you could see somebody picking it up, but it has to be for a pretty reasonable price. Not necessarily for what Quibi was paying for it.
He's not going to get the $1 million an episode that he paid for it, or however much it was.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a good. It will be a good fit. I always think that Netflix needs more short form content that would play better. In fact, you know, any of the major SVOD platforms, they all could do, I think, with more short form content that plays better on mobile, that people will be able to use their service, get more use out of their service when they're on the hoof. So maybe somebody like that will pick it up. Gosh, Disney seems to have bottomless pockets for this sort of stuff, don't they?
In this case, too little, too late, I think, Colin. And you and I can justifiably do a little bit of crowing that we were ahead of the game on this one and saw this one for what it was all the way back at the beginning, 15 or 16 months ago.
Well, I'd like to say that we were unique, but I think there was quite a few people scratching their head, Will.
Plenty of company, right?
You know, more power to Jeffrey Katzenberg, because, I mean, he overcame intense skepticism from folks like us and got people to invest $1.75 billion. So,
yeah,
you know, man, the guy is certainly very persuasive.
Very persuasive, exactly. But not persuasive enough to get enough users on board to make the service sustainable.
Indeed not. But on that note, right, I think we are out of time.
All right, Colin, good chatting about Quibi with you. And for our listeners, if you think that we missed something on Quibi, but maybe they had a chance, they had done something else, just let us know.
Yeah, we'd love to hear it. Drop a comment on both either of our postings when we post the podcast.
All right. Thanks, Colin. Good chatting. And thanks, everybody, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. And we'll see you all again next week.